From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection for this hour was made on May 14th, 1998. 76 million viewers watched the finale, a two-part Seinfeld episode that wrapped up the series after 9 seasons. And since then, Seinfeld fans have clamored for a reunion, or better yet, they say, a relaunch of the show. Same characters. Heck, same set. Phones with cords, VHS tapes, acid-washed jeans, the works. Why not? Jerry Seinfeld said recently it's possible. Now seems to be the time for the reboots. That music is starting to kill me. I didn't even know how long the song goes. But anyway, Will and Grace, by the way, is enjoying a renaissance. Roseanne is back on the air next month. Murphy Brown is coming back. Full House won't leave us alone. Then there's Twin Peaks, Miami Vice, Dynasty, even the Jetsons. There is apparently nothing that cannot be exhumed for fresh laughs and ratings. But why? This hour, a conversation about nostalgia, letting go of our favorites, and why so many of us want our favorites to return. And for the record, I am here for a new season of Seinfeld, everyone. I'm in for that. My guests include Tom Proietti, resident scholar in media at St. John Fisher College, and maybe the world's biggest Seinfeld fan.
Yeah, that could be, Evan. It's terrifying how bad I am at it.
Great to have
it's
you back
disease.
Here.
Yeah.
Kate Sweeney is a big TV fan, co-organizer of Ambush Rochester. How are you? Thanks for being here.
Well, how are you?
Very good. And Bob Thompson on the line with us, director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. Bob, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks.
Bob, do you want Seinfeld back?
Well, you know, we got a reunion of sorts with Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing, Bob. You're right.
Yeah, so it's we've kind of seen it before. You know, I don't know. Some of these reboots, One Day at a Time, which was a totally different show, has been one of the best reboots ever. Total, completely different program. I'm not sure that we need to trot Elaine and Kramer and all the rest of them out one more time again, but what do I know? Kramer has a little bit of a cloud hanging over his head.
Yes.
He managed to kind of dance around and curb your enthusiasm, but for a total reboot, I think there may be some questions about that.
Yeah. Well, Seinfeld said this past September that maybe it's nice that we continue to love it instead of tampering with us with something that did go pretty well the first time around. So
let's remember that he had been offered wheelbarrows full of money to continue that show. So they had stopped it on their own choice, and maybe keeping it stopped on their own choice would be a good idea. And of course, Jerry's off doing other things, and so is shows like Veep.
Yeah, Veep is some of the best comedy ever done.
Yeah. Yeah, so Julia Louis-Dreyfus has done just fine for herself. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Well, actually, certainly. Actually, three of them have done just fine. Yeah. And then Larry David has kind of kept Michael Richards busy. And like Bob said it judiciously and kind of well, is, you know, he brings Michael Richards back on and kind of addresses the issue of, you know, of racism with Michael Richards, because his career was kind of ended with a racist outburst in a club. And you know, that's a whole other story. But I tend to agree with you, Bob. I think it's better to have the anticipation of Seinfeld returning rather than Seinfeld returning. And I think Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know, it's Seinfeld with F-bombs.
Wait,
and it's
you
a lot
don't
more fun.
Want Seinfeld? No. The biggest fan?
I think maybe one program, but it would have to be so carefully written, because if it ended up being like the final episode of Seinfeld, I would want to commit suicide.
If I turned on the television, you know, with rabbit ears now, and I saw Jerry Seinfeld again, that would be like discovering plutonium by accident.
But you don't need it. There's 180 episodes out there already.
That is true. And they're very accessible.
I'm 72 years old, and by, you know, my brain, everything's a new experience for me, so it doesn't make that much difference.
Kate, you want Seinfeld back, Kate?
I kind of agree. I don't think it needs to come back. I think it ended on like a really good light. I feel like some of the other shows, like the Roseanne reboot, I feel like at this time, it'd be nice to see what the Connors are doing. I feel like in this time that we live in America, and that's a story that I feel like can continue, where Seinfeld kind of ended its run in a good way.
And I don't really remember how Roseanne ended.
You know, well, Seinfeld ended terribly.
And that's what I thought. It ended badly.
Here's
right?
the interesting thing. John Goodman's character, Dan, died, but they're pretending that never happened, apparently.
Right. That's what I mean. So the reboot,
he's there.
He's back.
Yeah, well, because you didn't even know that he died until the very last episode. He wasn't in the last few episodes.
Done.
You thought it was good?
Well, most people hated that entire final season because, of course, they go from being a struggling working class family to being multimillionaires because they win the lottery. And then they go on, they have guest stars and celebrities, and it was a very Dada final season. but that last episode, where we find out that, that none of that had happened, that Roseanne, in fact, went down to the basement, and she wrote her life, and her husband had died, who, by actuarial principles, probably would have died young. I thought it was quite
You're
nicely
being
done,
kind,
but they're just kind of, I guess, going to erase that.
Yeah, and so let's go ahead, and I want to do two things with Roseanne, which is relaunching again next month. I want to play a clip from Roseanne of, and then we're going to talk about how they're sort of not trying to be too political, but the show always had a little bit of working class politics, and they're going to keep that. This is Roseanne in the original version talking to her her door-to-door traveling state representative. Let's listen.
Hi, I'm Mike Summers, your state representative. How you doing?
Great.
Good. I'm going door to door trying to get to know my constituents.
Oh, door to door, huh? That takes a lot of time. Why don't you just go down to the unemployment office and see everybody at once?
I hear you. And you're right. We can't let this area's workforce lay idle. That's why bringing in new business is my number one priority.
How?
Through tax incentives. See, we're going to make it cheaper for out-of-state businesses to set up shop right here in Lanford.
So they get a tax break?
Yeah, that's why they come here.
Well, who's going to pay the taxes that they ain't paying?
Well, you will, but you'll be working. Good, steady employment.
Union wages?
Well, now, part of the reason these companies are finding it so expensive to operate in other locations...
So, they're going to dump the union so they can come here and hire us at scab wages, and then for that privilege, we get to pay their taxes.
Is your husband home?
Well, he's on the phone trying to keep us from losing our house. Hey, let's talk about that. See, we're broke. I can't even afford to go buy groceries unless it's double coupon day.
Mm-hmm. You know, we should talk about that. Oh, but I have several houses I have to get to before I quit.
Well, hey, great. I'll come with you. Boy, it's getting rough out here, Mike.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting so my son is going to have to wear my daughter's hand-me-downs. And for real this time, not just for fun.
Wow. That's from the original Roseanne.
That's Roseanne at her best.
That's good, except for there's no politician in history who would say when asked, well, who's going to pay that company's taxes? You will.
You will.
No politician.
Not one that wants to get elected.
Alive or dead. That's exactly right.
In Monroe County, they would have said comida.
The only thing, Kate Sweeney, the only thing we know about the new Roseanne is that they have said that she is going to have been a Trump supporter, that her family will have been. And she said the reason is because she wants to keep it true to the working class roots of the show, and the working class voted for Trump, which, listeners, should probably point out, that's not true unless you remove all non-white people. White working class voted for Trump, but not working class America.
Right.
So
right.
Anyway, but Kate Sweeney, what do you make of that?
Well, I feel like in the original of the show, we kind of watched the Connor family come all the way up. In the beginning of the show, she worked at a factory job that was, you know, a blue-collar job. Both her and Dan had blue-collar jobs that were... And then we watched, just as it did in America, it go away for them and them have to figure out alternate ways to make money and how they were going to continue to survive. So I feel like it does kind of... I wonder how political they will get. They always kind of... you know, crest the line with it. And I wonder how much they'll actually go full force, because it could go either way, good or bad.
Yeah, and one of the things I want to throw in, and I want to ask Bob this as well, and Kate, you work at a college, and I work at a college, and Bob does. I just don't see my students being at all interested in any of this. You know, even the Seinfeld reboot, I don't see them being interested. And, you know, there's part of me that every time I hear about a reboot, I think, oh, you know what, this is a dead, old, tired franchise. And these are boring network executives who are terrified by Amazon and Hulu and the original programming coming out of Netflix. They're just terrified by it. And they've run out of ideas. And so what they're doing is they're going back to the well and, you know, tapping into the old franchise. And I'm thinking, wait a second, that's only going to be appealing to people probably over 40 years old.
So Netflix is doing itself.
Yes, they
Full
are.
Full House
right.
was one of its
Full
biggest,
House, Gilmore Girls.
Fuller House.
Yeah, Fuller House, right.
I think you're right, and this is kind of depressing, but you're right. When we ask our students how excited they are about the reboot of Roseanne, they will say, the reboot of what?
Of what, yeah, exactly.
So you're right about that.
Yeah.
And I think the politics of this, from the sounds of it, and this is a very limited season. It's like, right. eight, ten episodes?
It's
like
eight
that?
Episodes, yeah.
And I think on the first episode, we're going to reveal that Roseanne was a Trump supporter, and her sister was a heavy Hillary supporter. Right. She's got the nasty woman T-shirt and the hat and all the rest of it. And I think they're going to have it out on the first episode. But my understanding is that after that, they're kind of going to pull back from that. So we're going to have to... we're going to see. But reboots, if we were to now name a list of all the reboots in the last 2 years, either made or announced, it would be a long, long list.
Yes, it would.
Some of them, I think, have been brilliantly done. Some of them have been incomprehensibly bizarre, Twin Peaks.
Well, and Bob, in a second, I'm going to read the at least the edited list that I have. I'll get that in a second. But maybe, Kate Sweeney, maybe what Roseanne and these networks want is that coveted 59 to 84-year-old ad demo.
Well, that's true, because they are still the ones that are watching network television.
Are you a cord cutter?
I am a cord cutter. I in fact, have rewatched Roseanne recently because it's on the Laugh Network, and it's back to what I was when I was a kid. That's on TV, so I'm going to watch that.
What about students? Do you think that they even know what these programs are?
I think they know what Seinfeld is, because I think there's a lot of like colloquialisms that have come into the you know, punchlines, lines that have become part of the vernacular that students use, and so they can relate to the show that way. Roseanne, not so much. Yeah. I mean, I'm 39, and I feel like I'm the target audience for the reboot of Roseanne, like my generation, like, because we were younger, we enjoyed the show, we've continued to watch the show. Like,
and by the way, Seinfeld has been an evergreen that has constantly been around. It's actually been more available in the last 20 years than it was while it was on.
But not Roseanne.
Not Roseanne.
I mean,
no,
very, very little like Seinfeld in that way.
No,
Kate.
Not at all.
So, but I want to open this up to callers as well. Listeners, have you cut the cord? This is central to the conversation.
Yes, it is.
I mean, Tom's pointing out that networks are sort of desperate, and it looks in some ways like they're out of ideas. But in other ways, you know, the way our own habits have evolved has put networks in a hard spot. And maybe that's why they're going back to these old standbys. So, listeners, 844-295-TALK. Have you spent hours on the phone with Spectrum trying to just get them to listen to you? 844-295-8255. I'm just kidding, Spectrum. You can call us. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester. 263-9994. Before I get to the full list that we have of reboots and exhumations of shows, the question on how Roseanne's going to handle Dan still being alive is interesting. Will and Grace had to do this. So let's listen to the cold open of the pilot episode of the new Will and Grace. The characters explained what had changed in the 11 years since they went off the air. The answer was not much. They addressed the old series ending, where Will was living with Vince, Grace was still married to Leo, Will and Grace's kids go to college together and get married. This clip begins with Jack shaking a pill bottle and waking Karen out of a stupor.
What's going on? What's happening? Who won the election?
Your guy.
Oh, I had the craziest dream. You were there, and you were there. You weren't. In the dream, Will was living with a swarthy man in uniform, and Grace was married to a Jew doctor.
Yeah, well, we were. But we're single now.
That tracks. To the children you had who grew up and got married to each other.
That never happened.
Oh, what a relief. Nobody wants to see you two raise kids.
Yeah, I mean, what would be funny about that?
But you're not still living together.
Oh, no. I mean, she's living here right now.
So, staying here for just a couple of weeks until the dust settles.
On your genitals?
On my divorce?
Because of your genitals.
Wait a minute. What about Stan? Is he still alive? Am I still rich? Answer the last one first.
You're rich, Stan's alive, both single, no kids.
I still love Megan Mullally, by the way.
She's the best part of the show.
Have you watched some of the reboots?
I have continuously watched
them. I have too, and I've liked it.
I've liked it too. I've had a lot of different people say that they weren't necessarily a fan and couldn't get into it. I feel like the first episode was a little shaky, but I feel like they got their ground after that, and it's kind of back to the old jokes and what's still funny.
Yeah, I mean, it's the old formula. I mean, there's nothing really surprising or daring about it, but it's remarkably consistent with what it was. It doesn't feel like a cheap reboot. It feels pretty consistent.
No, I feel like they're not trying so hard.
Yeah.
You know?
And remember, every one of these things that we're rebooting is a brand that has all kinds of characteristics to it. And I think one of the things you're pointing out about Will and Grace is they've been brand consistent. But some of the other ones have had real problems tapping into the old brand and reminding old folks like me what they were and what they now want to be. And so with Will and Grace, I've watched a few episodes. It's not at all compelling for me, but you know, and I like the original series. I find the latest thing.
It'd be so boring if you and I agreed on everything.
You know what else has happened to me is there's so much other great content. I could spend my life in front of a TV set and never watch a network program. And that's kind of a sad commentary for the networks.
It's very sad for the networks. Bob, what do you make of the Will and Grace thing?
Well, I think there's a number of different kinds of reboots. There's those like Will and Grace that are simply bringing back the whole cast and, you know, putting on the show all over again. Fuller House, to some extent, Will and Grace, even Twin Peaks. Murphy Brown, which is coming up, seems to be doing that, at least with Candace Bergen. And I think Will and Grace has been a pretty competent sense of that. It was a lot more exciting back when Will and Grace was a big deal. Now people have taken the content that Will and Grace pioneered and have, you know, gone many, many more steps beyond that. But then we've got all kinds of other reboots. We've got the reboots that are, I mean, One Day at a Time, which I think is the best one yet.
I agree.
I don't think we should even call that a reboot. It's a whole new pair of boots. I mean, it's got different content, but it does have some continuity. The theme song, Norman Lear at 95, is still in the credits, but I don't think he's doing too much in the show. So rebooting themselves, I don't think we can make a judgment whether this is good or bad. We reboot Shakespeare hundreds of times every year. We reboot the Greek mythology and stories of Thor and comic books and all the rest of it. It's really all a matter of execution. I think Will and Grace is a pretty competently executed reboot.
And now one of the dangers, I think, Bob, and you're a better historian about TV than I am, is we're rebooting almost everything that is old, traditional, white, male, female, mainline. And we didn't have a lot of diversity to do any reboots with.
Right. You're right. Reboots are going to generally be non-diverse because there was no diversity. However,
right.
I have good news on that. ABC is taking a 1970s incredibly failed program called Get Christy Love.
Oh, I remember that show.
A brief moment to use blaxploitation films. They did Shaft,
right.
Get Christy Love, a number of others. None of them worked. And if there's any reboot I'm most looking forward to, it's Get Christy
That's
Love.
Interesting. I'm making a note of that one, Bob. I'm going to be watching.
And before I come to your phone calls, I will just mention for fans, there have been a lot of calls to do a full reboot of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Alfonso Ribeiro is the reason he says it's not going to happen. He is upset that his character, Carlton Banks, became his life persona.
Yeah.
And he said he was penalized as an actor because he was so good at it. And he says, I would love it if the world would just let that show go. He said to People magazine a couple of months ago, he said, it's wonderful that everybody loves what we did 25 years ago, but I believe in current and future. People who live in the past, you're not moving forward.
Amen.
So Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, not coming back.
And typecasting has always been a problem, no matter where the industry, it doesn't make any difference. If you're a performer and you get typecast, it's Kramer.
And this is where I agree with
him. It's Michael Richards.
This is where I agree with him. He did such a good job as that character to get pigeonholed. It's not his fault.
Yeah, Michael Richards tried a few things, and he walks in the room, and he's Kramer. He can't be anything else.
Yeah, no, and Carlton was an iconic character, and it continued. Like, even kids that never watched Fresh Prince Bel-Air know it the memes and things like
that.
Of him doing the dance, and he's continuously that's all he's been able to do. You know, I think it's similar for the actor who plays DJ on Roseanne. He didn't really do anything afterwards. He did a couple of things, and then he decided, well, I'm never going to be anything more than DJ, so I'm going to go have a life somewhere else and do, you know, until the reboot. He was, yeah. coaching baseball for his kids. And
But so. one of the great stories, though, in typecasting is the soup Nazi who appeared in one episode.
Well, I think we've got the
and
clip.
And he's launched his whole career.
Let's listen. This is Seinfeld, the soup Nazi.
Medium crab bisque.
You didn't get any bread.
Just forget it. Let it go.
Excuse me. I think you forgot my bread.
Bread, $2 extra.
$2, but everyone in front of me got free bread.
You want bread?
Yes, please.
$3!
What?
No soup for you!
Hello.
You think you can get soup? Please, you're wasting everyone's time.
Wow. I don't want soup. I can make my own soup. 5 cups, chopped porcini mushrooms, 1/2 cup of olive oil, 3 pounds celery.
That is my recipe for wild mushroom.
Yeah, that's right. I got them all. Cold cucumber, corn and crab chowder, mulligatawny.
Mulligatawny?
You're through, soup Nazi. Back it up. No more soup for you.
So that's the soup nationalist, and Tom, you...
The soup nationalist, I love it.
The alt soup. So you...
He's
you were
made
saying
a career.
He was... He made appears, a career out of it.
He made a career. He does conventions, and he doesn't even have to, he's honest about it. The book Seinfeldia, for anyone who's a fan of Seinfeld, this is a brilliantly written, it's Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong. It's a brilliantly written compilation. She actually spent 5 years of her life studying, and I think the subtitle of the book is the book about the program that was about nothing, or, you know, something along,
yes.
You know, and the program that changed everything was about nothing, and it's really brilliantly done, and it goes through this whole thing about what happened to him after one episode. I mean, he became a cultural icon in one episode. That's how powerful Seinfeld was.
That's true, although he never had a career after
nope.
that, as opposed to typecasting with people like Fonzie,
right.
Henry Winkler, and that kind of thing. My favorite typecasting story is Shatner, who, of course, became kind of a joke for his bad acting in Star Trek, and he managed to move that into that Boston Legal
Boston
stuff
Legal.
And all of that.
Oh, my God.
Betty White is another example who, you know, they're going to be 200 years old and still getting pretty good roles.
Sue Ann Niven. Yeah, she never lived it down, but Shatner. She actually lived it up.
It's funny, and I promise I'm coming to your phone calls in about 5 seconds, but Kate Sweeney made me thinking of Carlton. That is how kids these days, kids, young adults, often see the previous generations. We're familiar with these characters. They see them in memes. Shatner too, right?
And memes?
Oh, absolutely. And Shatner still has, I mean, he had many successful shows before he was Boston Legal.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
He had T.J. Hooker and everything else. I might be a big Star Trek fan. I mean, someone might be.
But the memes connection is interesting because a listener named Jill wrote to us and said, you know, these reboots are ways for new generations to connect with their parents' generations. I don't think kids are doing that, but maybe by memes.
Well, but I feel like they know who the characters are, but they don't relate to the characters, and they don't have the nostalgia following the characters to be able to be excited about the show. Like, I was excited about Will and Grace because I did enjoy the show when it was on. And I'm excited about Roseanne just because even though the last two seasons were not that great, and definitely rewatching them in reruns, now I'm like, oh yeah, they were really bad. But I'm still excited about the reboot and to see what happens because there were, you know, 7 great years of that show.
The other problem is that
if you're under like 45 years old, you not only consume the stuff that was of your time, you consume the stuff of your parents' time and your grandparents' time. We were forced to watch The Marx Brothers,
yes.
The Little Rascals, reruns of Lucy and Andy Griffith, even though those were old by the time we were kids. And that was true right up into the Nick at Night and TV Land generation. Now, anybody under the age of about, I don't know, 35 or 30 has never had to been forced to sit through, because there's no other choice, the old stuff. And that's completely changed the dynamic of nostalgia.
Yeah, and the other thing that's happened, too, is just, you know, I worked in cable TV for 5 years, from 1979 to 1985. And in that period of time, we saw the number of channels available in the household go from 4 or 5 at most in a major city to, by the time I left, we were at about 80 channels. And also what happened at that time, too, is multiple TV sets in a household and TV sets in bedrooms, so that TV went from being a communal experience to becoming a very private experience, so that even if you were watching, let's say, Andy Griffith, you're watching it on your own. You weren't watching it in that communal atmosphere, being shared by the parents and grandparents. And, you know, and now we're in a position where there are so many options available.
Well,
and
I think that's the key.
Yeah.
Like how many options are 100% out there? Because even when I was a kid, I may have had the option to go to a different room and watch TV, but I still only had, you know, maybe 10 channels to choose from. So, like, I had to watch one of those things.
Right.
All right, well, we have more clips, and I want to come to Fred and John in Rochester on the phone after our only break of the hour. We're talking about this wave of reboots that we see, and we'll run down the list for you, because we're talking about Roseanne, Seinfeld's rumored, Will and Grace, shows like that, Fuller House. But we're also asking what it says about us. I've got a really interesting email from a listener on this subject as well. So let's get our only break of the hour, and we'll come back with Kate Sweeney, a TV fan, co-organizer of Ambush Rochester. Tom Proietti is a resident scholar in media at St. John Fisher College. Bob Thompson on the line with us is director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. We're coming right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on the next Connections, a special rebroadcast of a conversation with Jeremy Richmond. He is the father of one of the children killed in the Newtown school shooting in 2012. He was in Rochester recently, and we had a chance to talk to him. It turned out, after another mass shooting, well, in light of what happened in Florida, you'll want to hear his words. We'll have that Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tim in Pittsford writes, I watched the new Fuller House with my kid. The only thing that could be worse would be eating cottage cheese that's been left out in a hot room for 2 months. Also, I'm 39 years old and we cut the cord last year. Best choice TV-wise we've ever made. That's from Tim in Pittsford. This is Fred in Rochester. Go ahead, Fred.
Well, 2 points, actually. I'd say let them rest in peace. and two, somebody tell me how I can get Spectrum to stop calling me and trying to sell me cable and
call the New York State Attorney General's office. Nothing. I'm serious about this. Nothing. I was the VP of Marketing and Programming for 5 years. Nothing terrifies cable companies more than a phone call from the Attorney General's office. Seriously.
Well, I'll do that.
Do
I'll
it.
I'll do that.
Well, good luck to you. Good luck to you, Fred.
And Fred, before you leave, what do you watch now that you cut the cord?
I don't watch much TV at all. I mean, I might watch some documentaries. I watch some XXI, but I don't watch much.
So
TV
you've
at
probably
all.
Actually become you've become a better viewer.
I get out better. I get out more. I exercise more. My health is better.
Evan, you have a show. You got a show you have to do with Fred. He's changed my life.
Well, thank you, Fred, for the phone call. And we saw
by the way, if we're going to talk about exercise, I think I'm the wrong guest.
Thanks, Bob. You and I both.
The Democrat and Chronicle did cover some foibles that people had, some struggles people had with Spectrum. So, Spectrum, this is an open invitation. Come on the show and talk to me about badgering people. And are you getting a bad rap, Spectrum? Maybe that's unfair. Probably not. Maybe.
I really have to tell you, my experience with Spectrum, and it's not because I used to work there, but my experience so far has been fantastic. So I think it depends on who your phone call rolls into, you know. That's, and I happen to, I think my cable bill is like $254 a month. So
you're the goose that laid the golden egg.
Oh yeah,
they're never letting you go.
Yeah, the service rep they send over comes over in a limo.
I do get about 2 notices a week for offering me a certain offer that I finally bit the bullet once, and I called and I was like, oh yeah, so I want this great offer that you keep calling and sending me. I literally had a stack of 20 of them, and they're like, oh, you don't qualify, right? And I was like, well, then stop sending them to me.
Maybe we're getting into a whole separate
hour. That's a whole other hour.
John in Rochester next. Go ahead, John.
Hi. I know opinions about the quality of television and the programs are inherently subjective, but of all the reboots and the ideas for the reboots, the best idea and my favorite was Twin Peaks, because of all the shows, I think it started out as the best show of all of them. I think the talent that created them was the best. In the reboot, some of the worst parts of the show were when they tried to bring back the original characters and the original forms. David Lynch is still brilliant, and the writing and the execution of the show, if you're a fan of his and a fan of his films and of the television show, I think you'd love the show. It was great, and it was on Showtime. It wasn't on network television, so they were able to push boundaries they couldn't on the original show. And all the sitcom reboots, I just think television has moved on from that format. They've evolved, and I think it's great for nostalgia for some people, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm all in favor of people that were supremely talented originally, like David Lynch, that are still around and still vital and can still show us how they've evolved with the times and give us something weird and wonderful like Twin Peaks. I'm all in favor of that.
Thank you, John. That's interesting. He gave us 2 points, and I want to work backwards because I just got an email from a listener on the subject of sitcoms versus drama. So John is in favor of the more creative kind of programming. People have written to us about the X-Files, things like that.
Well, I feel like those are both Twin Peaks and the X-Files are kind of a reimagining of the original show and not necessarily a reboot, where Will and Grace is the same
formula. Reboot.
100% a reboot.
But here's what Chris says on that subject. Kate, Chris says, almost all the shows you've been discussing are sitcoms. This has always been a way we see the normal home and or workplace. And in some cases, like Norman Lear shows, they've extended the acceptable definition of normal. Does the current appetite for reboots speak to a desire to find some comfort in an old version of normal in what are now perceived to be turbulent times? That's from Chris. Isn't that interesting?
It is. Yeah. Well, and I feel like that's the heart of Roseanne, I feel like, is talking about flaws, the flaws in America, in the American family and everything else. And I feel like a lot of the sitcoms we have now don't address those things. They might be affluent families. They might have good job. It's more about the comedy of the show, not much about the real life.
Yeah, I think you're onto something. And I also, what's his name, John, that sent that note?
That was from Chris.
Chris made a couple of very good points. It's much easier to go back to, first off, a sitcom is usually 30 minutes. The drama's usually 60 minutes. They're much more difficult to recreate. It's much more difficult to go back and grab the old cast. But the other thing we've kind of run into now that television has aged and aged pretty well, in fact, this is the golden age of TV, are series like Law & Order, which has branched off into many other things, and there are so many versions of it available. You could have a Law & Order channel, and NCIS that's done the same thing. And I have to honestly admit, I've only seen one episode of NCIS, but I know there's NCIS, Los Angeles, New Orleans, and Miami, and... Yeah, so,
NCIS Rochester is coming up.
Yeah, man.
Got you, Bob.
Bob, do you think there's something to Chris's point about the nostalgia that maybe the sitcom has more of an easy apple pie nostalgia to us?
Well, yeah, the sitcom was always more consumable. I mean, when you watch old episodes of groundbreaking dramas from the 60s, East Side, West Side, and Naked City, and that kind of thing, they seem so dated.
Yeah.
Yet you can go back and watch The Flying Nun and I Dream of Genie, and there's a certain timelessness to their stupidity, their brilliant stupidity.
And Bob, isn't it true with
sitcom? I think this is not just all about nostalgia. For one thing, we do have dramas that are doing very much in the CSI NCIS mold, like MacGyver and Hawaii Five-0, which is in like its eighth, ninth season, which are doing solid ratings. And the other thing is that the reboots often are completely, if you were looking for nostalgia, and I hate to keep bringing up One Day at a Time, but I think it's really quite a brilliant little show. If you were looking for nostalgia of the 70s in that, you didn't get it. While it's very much proving that the three-camera, studio audience, laughing, old-school sitcom can still work, because it's all of those things, it's very much a show of the second decade of the 21st century, not a show of the 70s upon which it's based.
Well said. Very well said.
All right, so I want to bring in a listener who wants to take issue with some of what she's heard. This is Sharon in Brighton. Go ahead, Sharon.
I just want to say that without the 59 to 85-year-olds, PBS probably wouldn't even exist. And you guys, especially you, Evan, probably wouldn't even have a job.
Well, except for Homer.
All right, hold on. Let's let Sharon finish. Yeah, go ahead, Sharon.
To comment on what the networks don't want, like the 59 to 85-year-olds. And I really like PBS because they do cater to 59 to 85-year-olds in many ways.
Mm-hmm. And Sharon,
I'll take any comments off the air.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sharon, thank you for the phone call, first of all. And let me just clarify, because to the extent that Sharon is bringing up some offense, I think she's making an important point, so let me clarify as the host of this program. I said 59 to 84-year-old demo in a cheeky way because I think I said 55 to 84, because 25 to 54 is often viewed as a very lucrative demo.
That's
the advertisers.
Especially for females.
So they want 25 to 54, 25 to 54. And the joke I was making is that all of these shows are 30 years old. And
right.
So the coveted demo that they would be looking for would be 55 to 84.
Right.
And, you know, that was my way of pointing out that maybe the audience for these shows, even if they work, aren't going to be in the coveted demo that the ad folks love.
And let me answer Sharon on one other thing, too. She's talking about PBS primetime. PBS during the day is loaded with children's programming, and one of the most successful franchises in Rochester is Homework Hotline, which is, you know, it just does great numbers.
Whatever. You love Homework Hotline.
I absolutely do love Homework Hotline because I did not pay any attention in high school. So I can go back and watch Homework Hotline and learn the things I missed.
But let me make a serious comment to Sharon. To the extent that anyone was offended by that, I am legitimately sorry about that, because I was just making sort of a joke on the age of the programs. And Sharon's right.
She's right.
We not only value older listeners, older viewers on WXXI TV, we thrive because of the diversity of our audience, and we will never seek to be a radio program, a radio network, a radio station here, and a television station that only wants a younger demographic. So Sharon, thanks for calling out the host, and I will gladly give you that one. We're talking about nostalgia for bringing back shows from our pasts, and let me grab one more phone call. This is Keith, who's been waiting. Go ahead, Keith.
Evan, I would like to see CBS do a reboot. No, they're just start from scratch again, All in the Family, because it seems more apropos now than it did when it came out in the early 70s. And I'd have to also like to put a plug in for this program that my daughter told me about called Shameless.
Oh, it's fantastic.
It was on Showtime for, I think, 8 years, and it's still running, and it's on Netflix, and it's like, it's sort of like Game of Thrones without the endless killing, and you never say, oh no, they died. On Shameless, you say, why can't that person die?
By the way, Keith,
Shameless, you'll understand. Go ahead.
Keith, you brought up Shameless, and it truly, for the last 8 years, and by the way, just got renewed for 2 more years. Think about that. This program is so well done, and the characters are so powerfully lovable and hateable at the same time. And you just constantly feel like they're never going to make it. And, they are. They're all in the family, but even much more struggling. They're much more like a cross between All in the Family and Roseanne, actually.
So help me out, panel, and I'll start with you on this one, Bob. Archie is not a character. I have barely seen 5 minutes of All in the Family, I confess. I mean, I'm certainly familiar with the character. But the character was a vehicle to express social comedy, or the character was just a buffoon, or the character was truly prejudiced and representing prejudice. What's the story on Archie?
That's a very complicated question.
Sure. Yes.
Bunker was a prejudiced, bigot person. And because he was on a hit show 5 years in a row, number one, that had never happened before. It was subsequently tied by Cosby and topped by American Idol. But it was an enormous hit, the single most influential entertainment television program in American history. And he was a bigot, but of course Norman Lear was a good, solid, card-carrying, liberal, progressive thinking supporter of civil rights, and it was supposed to present Archie Bunker as a buffoon. However, you saw within the first season of that show, Archie Bunker for President bumper stickers, Archie Bunker for President buttons. There were people who saw Archie Bunker not as parody, but as, in fact, the guy who's been saying what they always meant to say. And I think Norman Lear himself, who created this, has never quite been happy with the fact that he released this Kraken into American television. As for rebooting it, they tried once. They did a show called 704 Hauser Street in the 80s, which took place in Archie Bunker's old house. Subsequently, a black family has moved in, and it's the reverse. Archie Bunker was the bigot. His son-in-law, the next generation, was the more open, modern-thinking person. In the case of 704 Hauser Street, a black family moves in, and you've reversed that whole conservative-liberal kind of thing. It was very interesting. It didn't make the season before it was canceled.
Right. I think Bob hit on a couple of really important points there, too. And one of the things I did hear Norman Lear say once is that he said, I intended the program to bring up a lot of issues, because one of the things he understood is that the media, especially television programming, is so good at setting the agendas for things that we talk about, the topics that are relevant.
Right.
He said, what I didn't intend was to make Archie as lovable as he was.
Yeah, he became, I feel like that, from my perspective, being very young and only seeing it, and I feel like the intention that Norman Lear always said was that it was supposed to bring this to the forefront. And really, it kind of made Archie this, like, lovable guy that, hey, it's okay to be a racist because, like, I'm this, you know, I've got this family, everyone will be, but it's okay.
So whatever the intention was, you said the effect on the public was different.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, he was my father-in-law. And, you know, my wife is listening, I'm sure. But he was my father-in-law. And for my father-in-law, he was what Bob was just talking about. My father-in-law used to sit there and say, at a time when Richard Nixon was president and then Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter, who were three of the most opposite from Archie Bunker you could be, my father-in-law would say, the country would be much better off if somebody like Archie Bunker ran the country.
Yeah, I feel like it made it, instead of opening people's minds, it made their own opinions relatable to them.
Well, it's normalizing what, yeah, you know, kind of like what Trump has done on a lot of behavior. So,
but it did do one really important thing, which is prior to 1971, and that's when January of 71 is when All in the Family debuted. Entertainment television was almost completely ignoring what was going on in the real world. There was a couple of exceptions, Smothers Brothers, Laugh-In, but a few. But in 1968, one of the top-rated shows in America took place in the contemporary Marine Corps,
yes.
Gomer Pyle, USMC. Yeah. Never once mentions that we're, you know, happening to fight a war in Southeast Asia. Never once mentions what real Marines are doing. And that was the 60s, where all this stuff was happening, the assassination, civil rights, the Cold War, Vietnam. Television represented that in entertainment form, with flying nuns, talking horses, witches, genies, my mother the car, and All in the Family overnight, by becoming not only a show that did something else, but by becoming a spectacular hit. That all changed. From All in the Family on, contemporary issues were covered not only in the news, but they were also now covered in entertainment television.
Right.
And that, we have to tip our hat to All in the Family.
My mentor, Bob, was Marshall McLuhan, and he used to say, we needed these programs to offset the reality that we were starting to get from real news.
Real news
coverage.
Very interesting.
And so, yeah, it was kind of an antidote.
Mike emails the program and says, Evan and guests, some television legends are better off left alone. Remember Lucille Ball's attempt at a comeback in the 1980s? Just awful. Right. Enough said. I don't, Mike, so there's another thing I don't know.
I do. Bob probably remembers
it. I remember it, and I choose not to go back.
I remember it, and it was not very good.
No.
Everybody knows Michael Jordan shouldn't have been a Washington Wizard. What are you doing, Lucille Ball?
Then Jack Webb came back to Dragnet in the 1960s after doing it in the 50s on TV and radio. In the 50s, and that was a big hit, so you just never know.
Yeah, you never do know.
So here's the list of modern reboots just in the last couple of years.
I'm going to go make a sandwich while you read this.
Executed or planned. The Jetsons, The Munsters, Miami Vice, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, Twin Peaks, Will and Grace, Seinfeld, Roseanne, Dynasty, Full House, and Murphy Brown. So Murphy Brown is coming back. I'm not sure exactly how or what, with what. I mean, certainly Candace Bergen, but I don't know about the rest.
Yeah, that cast is all over the place, and some are dead. And, you know,
and this is going back now 26 years. So let's listen to one of the famous Murphy Brown clips. This is on May 19th, 1992, as the presidential campaign season was heating up. Vice President Quayle delivered a family value speech that came to define him nearly as much as his spelling talent. He was speaking at the Commonwealth Club of California, and he chided Murphy Brown, the fictional 40-something divorced news anchor played by Candace Bergen on CBS, for her decision to have a child outside of marriage. He said, "Bearing babies irresponsibly is simply wrong. Failing to support children one has fathered is wrong. We must be unequivocal about this. It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice." Well, this was the character's response in the show.
"The American family and American values. This reporter has a unique perspective on the topic because in a recent speech, Vice President Quayle used me as an example of the poverty of values in this country and implied that I was a poor role model for our nation's youth. While some might argue that attacking my status as a single mother was nothing more than a cynical bit of election year posturing, I prefer to give the vice president the benefit of the doubt. These are difficult times for our country, and in searching for the causes of our social ills, we could choose to blame the media or the Congress or an administration that's been in power for 12 years, or we could blame me." "And while I will admit that my inability to balance a checkbook may have had something to do with the collapse of the savings and loan industry, I doubt that my status as a single mother has contributed all that much to the breakdown of Western civilization. But tonight's program should not be simply about blame. The vice president says he felt it was important to open a dialogue about family values, and on that point, we agree. Unfortunately, it seems that for him, the only acceptable definition of a family is a mother, a father, and children. And in a country where millions of children grow up in non-traditional families, that definition seems painfully unfair. Perhaps it's time for the vice president to expand his definition and recognize that whether by choice or circumstance, families come in all shapes and sizes. And ultimately, what really defines a family is commitment, caring, and love."
All right, amen. Kate, are you in on the reboot there?
I'm on the fence about it because I feel like it had such a social commentary of the time, but it was related to politics. It was related to her age, the age that she was on the show. And I'm just not quite sure how the reboot's going to actually work.
Does that speech work for you?
Absolutely. And I mean, if you think about today, I mean, nobody would ever consider saying such a thing. And that was, I'm not sure how many years ago it was.
92, 26 years ago. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was 26 years ago. And how much, like, no one would ever even consider saying that or publicly or anything else. And her response is true today.
You know who would? SNL.
They would say it in a satirical. It wouldn't be an attack.
Right. Yeah. So Bob, is there a sense in a reboot there for you?
I have the highest hopes for this for a couple of reasons. That show was about contemporary broadcast journalists.
Yes, it was.
She was a anchor of a 2020-like show. It ended in 1998, if I'm not mistaken. So Fox News and MSNBC were only a few years old. CNN had been around since 1980, but the big cable 24-hour news circus had only just begun to kick in. Also, this is going to be about, I presume, Murphy. Candace Bergen is coming back, who will be a 71-year-old woman at the time, which I think can get into all of the Me Too, Matt Lauer, Charlie Rose, all of this kind of stuff. There is such a rich and fertile ground of doing a new show about a strong professional woman in journalism in 2018, 19, whenever this comes out, that I think is even more relevant than when it came out way back in the day. So this is probably going to be terrible, but I have high hopes that it could be really good.
Bob, one other thing they throw in there, too, is the ageism thing, because there was always the thing about Barbara Walters going on forever, and you know, so many people held it over her head and said, you know, it's time for her to leave, and she left when she wanted to. And I think Candace Bergen Murphy Brown character I think they can pull this off. I agree with you. I have high hopes for this one.
Well, ageism comments about her in the old show,
yes,
and that's been off the air since 40. The 20th century.
Right. Imagine now. I mean, no one would ever question a. We would never objectify women. Oh, wait, look at this headline from this morning. Arkansas governor defends the Babe Bracket radio contest that ranks women journalists on their physical attractiveness.
Yeah.
The Arkansas governor thought that was
pretty
fine.
Yeah.
And I think he ended up going back and apologizing a little bit. But originally, Governor Hutchinson in Arkansas was defending a local radio contest that ranks female television anchors based on their looks. 103.7
The Buzz. Governor from Arkansas. Somehow that sounds a little familiar.
Well, next, a future president.
Well, I hope that, from what Bob said, I hope that Murphy Brown does have that, because now it actually made me more excited about it. The thought of it kind of being formulaic back to what it was, but if it actually does have a social commentary, it's a perfect time for it if that's what they actually make the show to be.
And I hope they bring back Lou Grant as the news director.
All right, so real quick, we got 30 seconds left. Kate Sweeney, the best of the reboots and the ones you have the highest hope for is?
I have the highest hope for Roseanne.
For Roseanne. Tom Proietti.
Murphy Brown.
For Murphy Brown.
I have to agree with Bob.
Bob Thompson?
I'm going to go both Murphy Brown and Roseanne, and in the long future, get Christy Love. I'm crossing off the dates on my calendar.
Bob, I got to go check that one out. Thanks.
It's going to be a while.
I'm going with Duck Dynasty.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I actually think that's still on, but I've never seen it. But anyway.
I'd like to see The Sopranos, but.
Well, there you go. Roseanne's coming back next month. Our thanks to Bob Thompson, the director of the Bleier Center for Television and Popular Culture at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. Thank you, Bob. Enjoyed it very much.
Thank you. That was fun.
Tom Proietti, resident scholar in media at St. John Fisher College. They can't bring back The Sopranos because they had to leave it with the fade to black. What are they going to do? Fade back up and go, oh, by the way, here is what happened.
You bring back Meadow Soprano. She's the new mob mom.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Bob.
I've already thought this one out.
Great having you here. And Kate Sweeney, we're kicking with your music for Roseanne. High hopes there. Thanks for being here. I really enjoyed
the
conversation.
Thank you very much. Super fun.
And you know what? It's been a hard week in this country, and I know we've talked about some heavy things. Thanks for letting us have a little bit of fun to finish the week here. Thanks to John Andrus, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Laugh a little this weekend. We'll talk to you Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.